What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp, FightfulSelect.com's Backstage Report podcast. We're here to give you some exclusive news from the Fightful Wrestling Weekly, some injuries, some contract updates, and some statistics. Let's go ahead and get into what you'll see in the July 8th edition of the Fightful Wrestling Weekly. Kairi Sane, the biggest story of the week. I had people asking me about Kairi Sane for months now. Not just over the past month that she's been absent from WWE TV, but for months before that, there were rumors that whenever her deal was up, she would go back to Japan and that she was unhappy, this and that. I don't know if she was unhappy. And I don't know when her contract was up, anything of that nature. I should say, with full disclosure, I had another media member, Daniel Wood, who reached out to see if I had known anything about Kairi's status. And at that point, I had been talking to some people about what she was going to do next or what the plan was, but I did not and do not know her contract status. I don't know if she's still got time remaining. I don't know if she owes them dates. I don't know if they have released her. I don't know if she's asked for her release. I do not know what is going on with the contract status of Kairi Sane. But she has not been on TV since sustaining a cut to the head during her match with Nia Jax at the end of May, which we had actually broke here on this website. But there were already other plans for her at that time. And even though a lot of people have been asking us about that contract status, we were told that as of the time of that injury, the original plan was for her to return to Japan and serve as an ambassador for WWE there. Now, we have been provided no details as to how that would have affected her in-ring career with the company. Wrestling Observer had followed up on this news and said that Kairi Sane was cleared and that she was scheduled for the WWE Raw tapings. I don't know that she did those tapings. I'm not sure. I hadn't heard that she had done them, but Wrestling Observer had stated that she was cleared there and that the original plan was to do a career-ending angle towards SummerSlam. And they had also mentioned that likely changed because Paul Heyman was dismissed from his role and that spot would have went to somebody else. I don't know that Paul Heyman being ousted is the reason for that change. I just know that as of 1 month ago, a plan was in order for Kairi Sane to serve as an ambassador for Japan. Now, I asked if this had anything to do with the long-rumored expansion into Japan for WWE and NXT. All I was told there was that there is no expansion planned at the moment because of COVID-19. I wasn't told if that would resume after COVID-19 is cleared up a little bit. Who knows when that will be cleared up, but we were not informed as to whether or not the original plans for Sane even got far enough to discuss that. Now, in the weeks that followed, many have gone radio silent about Sane's status with the company. Many want her to continue wrestling, and all of those that I spoke to had very positive things to say about her. And to be clear, we are unsure of how this situation has developed over the past month. Wrestling Observer reported what they did, but I have not specifically heard those things myself. I have not heard if she is featured on these upcoming Raw tapings, and usually that's something that I would hear. But at least as of May, the plan was for her to head back to Japan. So she had a nice run in WWE, I would say, but unfortunately, she suffered a lot of injuries, a lot of concussions. She is only 31 years old, but you got to remember, at 31 years old, she's been wrestling for 8.5 years, and she's been wrestling hard and long for 8.5 years. She is just decorated in stardom, one of their greatest stars. But in WWE, she came in and won the Mae Young Classic in 2017. She won the NXT Women's Championship, then moved up to the main roster and would win the tag team titles with Asuka. Oh, man. Here's to hoping that everything works out for Kairi, and hopefully we see her again in the future. If you wanted some more WWE piss news, well, I got you covered. A big shout-out to Gary Cassidy, who helped lead to some of this information kind of being uncovered, but that now infamous Jeff Hardy tossing a jug full of piss segment with Sheamus was produced by Devon Dudley and written by creative writer Zach Hyatt. There was also a road rider involved that we could not identify, and the segment originally called for the doctor to be named Dr. Kirschenbaum, but it was never referenced on commentary for whatever reason. We're told that there were significant changes across the board for Raw, SmackDown, and NXT in the coming weeks due to the adjustments of the roster, among other things. COVID testing has thrown a wrench into many plans for WWE, and while we can't attribute that to the match being called, but AJ Styles and Drew Gulak was moved back a week. AJ Styles was not at the previous tapings, then he was there this week, so we're not exactly sure how that all unfolded and all that worked out, but they did eventually have the match, of course. It was a very good match. Talk about plans that have changed. Shayna Baszler has been off TV, and I've got some more this week on the original plans for her. I wanted to run that this weekend, but unfortunately, I was looking to nail down just a couple of things. But there's no latest on her. She's not hurt. She's not injured. And from what we're told, she doesn't have COVID-19. She just simply hasn't been booked. Baszler had worked directly with Paul Heyman for much of her run, but hasn't been used at all since beating Natalya in a submission match almost 2 months ago on Raw. She has not been used since Paul Heyman left Raw, and wasn't for a while before then. We weren't given a real reason as to why she's not been used, but she is healthy. Now, Dave Meltzer did follow up on this as well and said that Vince McMahon made the call to move her and or remove her from TV, and that McMahon isn't a big fan of her MMA style wrestling. Now, the funny thing is, I think that Shayna Baszler has been significantly better on the main roster than she was in NXT. And supposedly, one of the disagreements between, or not disagreements, but the reasons that Paul Heyman was ousted was that Vince McMahon didn't see the potential in a lot of the talent that Heyman was pushing that Heyman saw. Oh, man. I don't know. I mean, there are some that... I think that Shayna Baszler could have been a very good addition. And if not, do something else with her. But ultimately, Vince McMahon oversees anything. So what are you going to do? Are you going to send her back to NXT? Well, she's done everything there. Short of being a tag team champion. Jeez, man. Jesus. This is very frustrating. Not frustrating, Kayla Braxton is getting a lot of praise within WWE. Kayla sort of outed herself as the first person in WWE to catch COVID because she mentioned that she had gotten it twice. Now, we did our best to omit that news because here's the thing. She let it be known to her coworkers that she had it, but I wanted to respect her privacy still. When I say that she let her coworkers know, WWE issued a memo. As I mentioned, I leaked the memo but redacted her name and some pertinent information back in April. But she went to them and said, yes, you can name me, you can explain how I think I got it. And as a result of that, she received a lot of praise about her transparency from her coworkers. Her name was in the memo, the circumstances were in the memo, and that would be the last time that WWE would name someone or even send out a memo regarding a positive test. They have not done that since then. I mean, there have been some memos that go back and forth on the internal talent relations app, but it's not the same. It's not the same as it was when Kayla Braxton got it. And that is upsetting some people that they are not being given the right amount of information because, I mean, some of these people know some of the wrestlers, but don't know that they have COVID, and it's a private thing. But also, they want to know if they need to stay away from them in other situations as well. So WWE's handling has been slowly improving. And here's the thing, it couldn't have gotten much worse. But WWE has implemented new measures to help fight COVID-19. But several changes were underway already. Fightful learned this, I think it was Sunday, that WWE had made several moves over recent weeks, including splitting the Raw and SmackDown tapings as to have fewer people around the shows. These moves alone helped ease the mind of some on the roster that had raised concerns, but that didn't quite settle things. Now, there's a WWE Raw star that had been on hiatus for a few weeks due to COVID-19 concerns. Pretty sure you all will be able to figure it out before long, but I didn't have enough to confirm the name. But they were said to have approached Vince McMahon shortly after their arrival at the Raw tapings last week, and they observed some people not utilizing social distancing, not utilizing masks hanging off of faces, some episodes of NXT and SmackDown that that featured people without masks on and, you know, like I said, hanging off their faces, all that stuff. So this Raw taping happened after the SmackDown taping from last week aired. This wrestler approached Vince McMahon specifically about these measures. And a lot of people say, well, why didn't Vince McMahon enact this before? Well, Vince McMahon is stowed away in an office during most of the taping days and doesn't usually see whether or not these practices are put into play. Occasionally, Vince does appear at gorilla position as well, but he's not as hands-on as one might think. He's got his hands in everything, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's out and socializing with everybody, especially in this landscape. So this wrestler approached Vince McMahon, had a meeting with him, and Vince McMahon was said to have given a stern talking to people that didn't follow the orders, at least around him. And then he did add the rule that masks are mandatory and that failure to comply will result in a fine. I was told that this helped ease the mind of many, many more. There are some that I've spoken to that didn't think it was that big of a deal. Personally, I think it's a big deal. Here's my take on it. Worst case scenario, you are being slightly inconvenienced by a piece of cloth. Best case scenario, you are helping prevent the spread of COVID. Now, before you come to me and you say, but Sean, everybody there's tested and they've tested negative if they're there. Doesn't matter. Better safe than sorry. Better safe than sorry. It is not a political statement to say that over 530,000 people in the world have died due to COVID. That over 130,000 in America have died due to COVID. And that Florida is full of a bunch of idiots. All due respect, Florida. I love you, Florida. I can't wait to come back. But I ain't coming back anytime soon. Not with you all acting a fool over COVID. Now, WWE should have done things better. They should have been testing from the get-go. Whether it be the rapid tests or full-on tests. That crock of shit that Triple H gave us on the media call was flat out disrespectful that he thought we were stupid enough to go for that. And I don't think that he was stupid enough to go for that. Triple H is smarter than that. Now, there are plenty of people in the wrestling world that are not smarter than that. You got your low keys and Austin Aries who are out there acting like my freedoms are being confronted and prohibited by a mask. I look at it this way, man. My wife is a special education teacher. She has a lot of immunocompromised students. My grandmother is an elderly woman who does hair. I don't want her doing hair right now. And she's not, fortunately. She's not. We're able to take care of her. I don't want her exposed to this. Does she have pre-existing health conditions? No, but the elderly are more susceptible. Ric Flair shouldn't be there. He's 70-something. Immunocompromised people should not be there. Roman Reigns shouldn't be there. Whether or not he's doing it for him, his kids, whatever. Don't be a selfish asshole for the sake of being a selfish asshole. And if you're out there saying, oh, I can't breathe in one of these fabric masks. Yeah, okay, well, let me know how all these wrestlers with masks have done it for decades and decades and decades. Some of those sons of bitches are in their 60s, still wrestling with a mask that covers their entire face. Do the right thing. Do the safe thing. Looks like NWA is doing the right thing. Well, kind of. I'd reported on June 25th that Zicky Dice had been granted his release after requesting it, but that it wasn't finalized. It still is not finalized. Despite reports indicating that he was released, it has not happened yet. NWA and Zicky Dice have been going back and forth on the terms of the release, and there are others that are working on their releases from the company. There are some terms that are being volleyed, so to speak. Richard Holiday, I spoke with him. He confirmed to me that he did have discussions elsewhere prior to re-signing with MLW, and he used the term contract as opposed to agreement. If you ever look at our contract article on Fightful, will have agreement or contract. If we're told that they signed a contract, then we use the term contract. But there are a lot of people that don't do that, and they work per appearance and a lot of that. But that's how the MLW contracts are largely structured. Now, he's very aware that he has the quote-unquote WWE look, but he said, and I thought it was a really good point, he said, why isn't that the MLW look? And to be fair, to his point, WWE does snatch up a lot of MLW talent. He says he thinks it's fun to think about what could happen if he went other places or followed someone like MJF over to MLW, or to AEW rather, but says MLW is a great platform and one he has high hopes for. And he said, for all the people that say, oh, I wish Dynasty would be in AEW, they should just watch MLW instead. He's already there. They're already producing great programming and thinks that goes over people's heads sometimes. Getting into MLW was an interesting story, as the company was primarily based out of Orlando. So booking Holiday out of New York was easier said than done. But the opportunity came up when MLW ran New York and he did enough to impress Court Bauer to get the offer to come back and do more work with the brand. The interview was partially in character, partially not. Talked about his use of the AirPods, the Caribbean Championship, and a lot more. That's going to drop this week. It's up for early access members of Select, though. My full report on the WWE, MLW, NWA, AEW, all the wrestling YouTube traffic wrapped up. Now, all these numbers were as of January 1, 2020. I released these individually, and then I compiled them to release again. Braun Strowman, Bobby Lashley did 38 million for an arm wrestling match. Braun Strowman flipped a limo and did almost 19 million there. Braun was a YouTube draw. Largely, the YouTube draws are Roman Reigns, Ronda Rousey, Cain Velasquez, Undertaker, mostly part-timers. This is for 2019 only. You get some that are involved, like Becky Lynch, Charlotte Flair, but usually it's those top names. You got John Cena, who's really consistent as well. But WWE on Fox has a channel that's doing really excellent numbers as well. Even though none hit the top 10 overall, there was a 6 million viewed video there of NXT and Raw doing the invasion of SmackDown. There are several Cain Velasquez, Brock Lesnar clips that did really well as well. ROH's YouTube last year shit the bed. And they got help. They got a lot of help since then. But last year, their top viewed video was Roosh versus Matt Taven, 261,000. That's not a blip on WWE's radar. That 261,000 doesn't even usually hit the top six or seven for Raw. And that was the most of last year. They needed help, and they finally got help. They only had three videos crack 100,000. I think we had more do 100,000 last year. And we never hit anything like that. What a bummer. AEW, now this one was a little bit difficult because they had BR Live and TNT and the AEW channel that all do stuff like, that all post AEW stuff. You have a little bit of everything, though. The Full Gear Go Home segment did 5.4. You get Cody and Dustin. You get Moxley, Pac, Omega, Paige. Jake Hager's debut did 2.4 million on TNT's channel. The Casino Battle Royal did over 1.5 million. The end to Moxley versus Spears did that. Orange Cassidy broke a million. Aja Kong and Awesome Kong broke a million. There were also two episodes of AEW Dark doing over a million. So, I mean, they've got a really eclectic group of stuff that does really well. New Japan, they have English-speaking and Japanese-speaking channels. Moxley and Shota, their big promo backstage, did 3.6 million. Minoru Suzuki, bowing to Liger, did 1.1 million. They could use a lot of work on their YouTube stuff, but they... It's coming around. I'll say that. Jon Moxley is a proven draw for them. As I look right now, Moxley has five of the top 13 English language speaking videos there. Their New Japan Japan channel, it doesn't really do a lot of clips like the American one does. Impact Wrestling, Jordan Grace 8.4 million topped out there. Sammy Callahan beating Tessa Blanchard with a ball bat, 6 million. You have Taya Valkyrie breaking the knockouts title record at 2 million. Scott Steiner getting a lap dance from Scarlett Bordeaux at 1.6. The big surprise, which shouldn't be a surprise, Mahabali Sherry got a lot of that traffic from India, did 1.9 million. But the women draw for Impact Wrestling, 4 out of the top 5. That's very impressive. Also impressive, a lot of the Beyond Limitless title match stuff. I'll let you all look through that, but it's mainly intergender stuff. And title match did that too. Like a Joey Ryan Miranda Alizé match did 58.8 million. That is suspect at best. Just same with Limitless. Chris Statlander versus Christian Casanova, 40 million. Something odd there to me. MLW, they usually post full shows, but their Battle Riot did 219,000. That's a pretty good number. The NWA, the first episode did 600,000. Nothing else did 375,000 last year. AAA, however, they had some really good, they do really well on YouTube. Like LA Park at the end of Triple Mania, 2.8 million. You get Sammy Guevara and Scarlett Bordeaux teaming up, 2.6. Cain Velasquez debuting got 1.4. Dr. Wagner and Blue Demon Jr., 2.3. There was a lot of stuff there. There were no NXT clips anywhere near this. AEW already passed ROH's subscribers. AEW uses a lot of tags that aren't related to their roster. CMLL barely tags anything on theirs. Also worth noting, the John Oliver expose on WWE in Saudi Arabia did 8.9 million. So those are some of the numbers that you'll see there. Wanted to make sure that was covered, as that was an under the radar series of stories that I did earlier this year. So I compiled them all into one dedicated post. Let's get into the injuries. Kairi Sane, as I mentioned, has not wrestled since sustaining a cut on May 26. She is cleared, according to Wrestling Observer. Ember Moon has been out with an Achilles injury since last year. She fears that she may have to get a second surgery. Joe Coffey was suspended, as were a couple of refs. Kyle O'Reilly was pulled from April NXT shows, but he has been backstage at the shows. A lot of people suspected, oh, maybe he's immunocompromised due to diabetes or something like that. He was at the shows. He was at Great American Bash. Mercedes Martinez is back this week. Riho stuck in Japan. Some contract updates. Jack Gallagher, Liguero, Travis Banks released after the speaking out movement. Zicky Dice granted that NWA release, but it's not yet official. Brian Pillman asked for his release from MLW, according to Saif Al-Sabah, who did get his release. That is one worth monitoring. I will reach out to Brian Pillman to find out if that's true. We also have your stats for the week. And this was a fun week to do stats. Outside of that gauntlet match to AJ Styles, Aleister Black hasn't been pinned on Raw in over a year. Robert Stone competed in his first WWE match. It's an 08 enhancement match to Kofi Kingston. I should specify that was incorrect last week. Cage match did not have it listed. I had said it was an 06 match against the Big Show, but it was his first match of any kind in 16 months, though. He's never won a match in WWE. Aleister Black and Murphy have competed in 8 televised matches against each other since December. The only 2 Murphy have won have been tag matches. Sasha Banks and Io Shirai happened for the first time Wednesday night. The only other match that both were in were last year's Survivor Series. Heading into Monday, Angel Garza and Andrade were only 1-3 as a 2-man team, beating Ricochet and Cedric Alexander. Ruby Riott is 0-11 since returning to TV. She has lost to Peyton Royce, Bianca Belair 3 times, Kairi, Charlotte, Asuka, Liv Morgan twice. Big Show's wrestled 4 matches on Raw in 2020 after not competing in any the last 2 years. Big Show has won 6 consecutive televised handicap matches in which he does not have a partner. The Shield were the last ones to beat him way back in 2013. Big Show has won handicap matches against Andrade and Angel Garza, Team Hell No, The Usos, Hulk Hogan and Kevin Nash, TNA, The Straight Edge Society, 3-Minute Warning, and the SATs, Joel and Jose Maximo, among others. The North have reached a year as Impact Tag Team Champions, the first in the history of TNA or Impact to do so. Matt Riddle has now beaten former WWE, IWGP, TNA, Impact, NWA, and Lucha Underground World Champions during his SmackDown run. We hope that you come back for the Q&A show for Alex's Sour Graps, all that. Let the people know that you like this show. Help me out, my friends. Until next time, we're out.